Welcome to another episode of Records Revisited, a podcast dedicated to the magic of music. I'm your DJ, your MC, the host on the East Coast. I'm Ben Montgomery. Joining me is the man who, after recording each episode, and I spend the next several days editing that episode, he's singing, done, I'm on to the next one. Here's my co-host from the left coast, Wayne Fugate.
Hola, Ben. I mean, that's truer than it probably should be.
Also on this episode, he's been on all of our previous Foos episode, mostly because I think after each episode we can hear him singing, but I will come back. All right, welcome back, Jeff Frame.
I'm here. I made it just in time. I beat the California traffic to get here.
Yeah. All right, for this episode, we have a special guest. He's part of a Foo Fighters tribute band in North Carolina called Joe Hero. Did I get that name correct?
You did.
All right. Welcome to the podcast, Link Butler.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So we connected. I can't remember. It was something on Twitter. You had posted something in regards to Foo Fighters, and I had posted something about Foo Fighters, and I'm like, we were looking for guests to come on. I'm like, hey, why don't you come on?
It's a match made in heaven. It was meant to be.
So just so you know, Link, there is about a second delay on yours. So Right. Everybody just be cognizant when you that you're not cutting him off, or just know that he's not purposely being silent at times.
Like me.
So just yes, like Wayne.
All right. I don't know what purposely being silent looks like.
You don't. Yeah, you're not aware of what that is.
Not even accidentally silent.
All right. I'm never accidentally silent.
No. All right, here we go. All right, premise of our podcast, fairly simple. We talk about music, but as we do at the beginning of each episode, I ask the all-important question. I'm going to start with Wayne. What t-shirt are you wearing?
I'm wearing a Guns N' Roses shirt, which doesn't really tie into any of this. It's got the band as skeletons, which is a popular theme for them, or was. This is clearly based on the hat on the one guitar player, this is the early incarnation with Izzy Stradlin.
Okay. All right. Jeff, how about you? What t-shirt are you wearing?
I went with my, this just happened to be the shirt I had on, so there was no planning for it. I've got my Fleetwood Mac at the Forum shirt from when I went and saw that. I'm going to the Forum. I'd plan on wearing a Pearl Jam shirt because I'm going to see Pearl Jam Saturday, but I didn't get home in time to change.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, congrats.
Yeah.
That'll be fun.
So maybe they'll have fat people t-shirts at this show, and I'll have a new one next time I'm on.
Okay. All right. How about you, Link? What t-shirt are you wearing?
I am wearing my King's X Out of the Silent Planet t-shirt. It's their first album, probably one of the most underrated bands ever to walk the face of the earth.
You know, and there's a lot of people that I know that keep telling me that I need to check them out, and that's a kind of a blind spot for me. Jeff or Wayne, King's X?
Never have. Never only have
little,
listened.
Only a little in the late 80s.
Okay. All right.
I
really encourage you to check them out.
Well, I may now, because I don't have a specific like negative thing. It's just one of those I just have never had many people recommend it. So.
Yep. Yeah, me too. All right. Well, I'm wearing not a music related t-shirt. I'm wearing my t-shirt about the Goonies. So
it's a good one. I like it.
Yeah. Yeah. So visited Astoria one of the times that I came up to go see my mom and my brother. So we did the Astoria thing. Couple hours away from Tenino, Washington. So there we go. All right.
Everything's a couple miles away. A couple hours away.
Everything in Tenino, everything. Yeah, that is the, if you look at the definition of BFE, Tenino is listed right there. So
BFT.
BFT. There you go. All right. Well, Link, tell me about Joe Hero.
Sure. We are a Foo Fighters tribute, and we also do 90s rock and grunge. We've been together. This is our 17th year playing together.
Wow.
And job. We started off as an original band. Yeah. I mean, it just means we're all old. you know, we started off doing all originals. We were covering Monkey Wrench, and our drummer, Scott Hardesty, he suggested one time, why don't we try doing a full set of Foo Fighters, see how that goes. And we've been doing that ever since, and it's been going really well. It's a lot of fun.
That's awesome. That's awesome. What is your typical set look like? I mean, we were talking offline before Wayne and Jeff jumped on, but tell me what a typical set, if you're going to go see Joe Hero, what's the kind of stuff you're going to hear?
Sure. We can expect pretty much all the Foo Fighter hits, you know, Best of You, The Pretender. We also throw in a few deep cuts, ones that we consider deep cuts that aren't, you know, just played on the radio a lot, like Generator. We've done Breakout. We've done Hey Johnny Park, you know, Long Road to Ruin. But you can expect Monkey Wrench, Everlong, you know, all the ones, Learn to Fly, Times Like These. It also depends on the length of the set. You know, if it's a shorter set, then it is going to be truly a greatest hit set. But if we usually get to play a little longer, depending on the venue, if it's like an hour and a half, that's when you're going to see some of those deep cuts come out.
Do you do Weenie Beanie?
We do not do Weenie Beanie.
Okay. All right. All right. You're okay in our book then, Link.
All right.
I think when we wrap up this series, we'll talk about our favorite Foo Fighters songs and also our least favorite. And I have a feeling Weenie Beanie is going to make probably all of our lists. Is that pretty accurate, Wayne?
For the bottom 10, yeah. There's no way it would be.
Yeah.
Jeff?
Yeah, it's going to... I mean, we're not doing a full bottom 10, I wouldn't think, right? But that or... I mean, I think White Limo is going to compete for me.
Well, yeah, it's kind of in the same vein.
Yeah. It does the same thing for me.
Yeah, yeah. All right, well, let's just get into this. So we're going to do one by one. We've been, should I give a little bit of the sausage making factory here? We've been trying to do this episode for what, like 3 weeks. And this is just, with all of our scheduling and I mean, Jeff had to go to a wedding for his niece. I mean, like what's that? What's that about?
Right.
Like, family comes before Foo Fighters? What?
Barely, because I'm on this most nights, it seems like. Next week, I think I'm on this two nights. Yeah.
You are.
So family's taking a back seat to Foo Fighters, I think, for the most part.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I don't even know what to say on this. I would say this. I think that I've always had this opinion that One by One is either my least favorite Foo Fighters album or in the conversation for that. And so last week Wayne and I were supposed to record without you, Jeff, and both of us were like, nah, I think we need Jeff here. So we canceled.
Wait. Hold on. Can we back up? Did Wayne really say, I think we need Jeff here? There's no way that happened. There's no way he's going to admit it if it did happen.
Okay. All I'm saying is I'm not going to spoil this for you, Jeff.
Oh, he's talking about something else. The one by one.
But
we didn't.
Hold on.
We did
hold
say
on.
Something very.
Hold strange. On. So when the episode for The Police comes out in a couple weeks, Jeff, you need to listen to it. I'm not going to say anything else about it.
Oh boy.
But Wayne gave you
I've been drinking.
A lot of compliments.
That's not true. I don't.
A lot of compliments.
Wayne gave me compliments on that episode.
Well, yeah, he did.
Do I? What do I? What do I have to pay to be a to get the early access? Like, do you have a way that people can get early access?
To join the Patreon.
Yeah, yeah. Is there a way, Ben, that you can get early access to episodes and hear them before the rest of the non-paying public?
Jeff, as low as $3, you could get access on our Patreon.
You know what? That's worth it, probably, to hear Wayne say something nice about me.
Link, I'm so sorry that you have to hear mommy and daddy fighting.
We're not fighting. So. This is us awkwardly making up in front of everybody. This is mommy and daddy.
It's a lot like a lot of dysfunctional families. Daddy gets drunk and he starts telling mom how he really feels about it.
Right.
I love you so much, baby.
Right.
I guess we should give the disclosure. We're recording this on Cinco de Mayo, and Wayne is pretty lubricated right now.
Yeah. What's Cinco de Mayo? I had to start out with the sangria.
All right.
Okay. I already threw out that I think that this is one of my least favorite Foo Fighters records. Jeff, how about you? What's your opinion?
You know, here's the thing. I don't know that I've got them all ranked. I think I've realized that in going through them. I think that there are highlights, there are lowlights all throughout. I think I declared my favorite album, when we did Color in the Shape.
Early.
Yeah, when we did Color in the Shape, because I feel like it is. And then another album I was prepping for, I started to kind of wonder, like, boy, I wonder if this could overtake it. And then it doesn't, and I'll leave that for that episode. But what I'll say about this album is... I don't know quite why this album gets such a bad rap, in my honest opinion. I think that it's probably a little bit of a revisionist history because when it came out, it was actually pretty well received. So yeah. I do think that there is something about the fact that some of the lore of the tension among the band while recording it, when you read the wiki about it, it has something to do with it. I think some of that has seeped into a revisionist quality about it. Because when this album came out, most of us liked it, to be honest with you. But all of that said, I do agree with this quote from Chris Shiflett about it, that there are great songs in One by One, and then there are parts of great songs. And that is kind of how I feel about a lot of the songs, where there are some songs that I think could have really gone some places that they didn't quite get to, but the nugget is there, and I wish they'd have done a little bit more with it. I think overall for this one probably has a little bit of a special place for me, and I've got a little bit of a different affinity for it because my oldest son, Liam, he was about almost 3 when this one came out, and he freaking loved this album. He just loved it. I mean, it was the album that I could put on, and he would dance and rock out to it, and he would sing the line over and over and over again incessantly. Hey, don't let it go to waste. I love it, but I hate the taste. Just over and over, just on repeat, loud, and just like it was the best to watch this 3-year-old sort of just rock out to it. And this is when he became a Foo Fighters fan. So I think that has that shapes my opinion of it. And also, I think that it has 2 of what are probably going to end up being on my top 10 favorites list. And one of them I'm almost sure is going to be top 5. So I think there's a couple of sort of paint by number rock songs, but I think there's also some really cool stuff here.
Yeah. Link, how about you? You haven't had the benefit of being on the previous couple episodes. Where does this stack up in your favorites?
I think it's about middle of the pack for me. Obviously, I think the quote from Shiflett is right on. There's some really great songs on it, and there's ones that have some great moments in it, but maybe the idea of the song wasn't quite as cohesive as it needed to be. I mean, when you think about the prior 2 albums, Color and the Shape, There's Nothing Left to Lose. There's also just a very stark and different production value on this one. That sort of stands out. And I describe it as kind of a dry record. It just sounds, like reverb was used very sparingly or not at all in some cases, whereas on the prior 2 records, it was a little more prevalent. So it was just very different kind of mix and production value, too. But I put it kind of in that middle of that.
Yeah. Wayne, how about you?
I think of the ones we have done to this point, it's at the bottom.
Okay. And you're going to discover a few albums coming up that you haven't really dove into, correct?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So we'll come back to that. We'll come back to this after you've discovered some of those other records, and we'll continue this discussion. You've already mentioned Chris, so this is the first album where he appears on the recording. They had added him for the touring portion for the previous album. I think Taylor is drumming on every track, unlike the last album where we were kind of determining, okay, is this a Taylor drumming track or is this Dave? We were kind of divided on which of the songs were Taylor and which ones were Dave. I'm pretty sure that Taylor is on all of these.
I think so. I think from our knowledge. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you can hear definitely he's hanging around Dave Grohl. There's some songs that would be more up for debate than others. But yeah, from my understanding, he's the only one.
Yeah. You mentioned, Jeff, that this was successful. We'll talk about the Grammy Awards. This was a commercial success as well.
Yeah.
Peaked in number three on the week of its release. And sold well. Guys, want to hear? Let me give you a little time capsule of 2002. So this was released in October of 2002. So here are your top seven. So number seven is the Eminem Show from, naturally, Eminem. Dixie Chicks Home is sixth. Elvis's 30 number one hits was fifth. Rod Stewart's It Had to Be You, which I think was just like a covers record, which Rod was trying to be Tony Bennett at that time. Number four, Foo's at three. Faith Hill, Cry was number two. Any guesses on what the number one album was the week that the Foo's peaked? Anyone want to give a guess?
2002.
I'm going to guess Linkin Park.
No.
I'm not sure which album it would be.
Yeah. No, good guess. That would have been right in that time period. You can hear Wayne. He's like trying to Google.
Is it
right
boy now. Bandy?
No.
Hmm.
Somebody who had been around for decades.
Johnny Cash.
Santana's Shaman.
Oh,
was the number one record that week?
Right.
Well, I think I'd take this album over every one of the ones you listed off.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. We've talked about their best rock album Grammys. They won the Grammy Award for this. It was their second award for best rock album. The other nominees. Here we go. So let's see if you agree that the voters got it right. Audio Slaves, self-titled.
That's a pretty great one.
It is really good. It is. Evanescence, Fallen, which it's okay. Matchbox 20, More Than You Think You Are, which I just listened to that a couple months ago and it didn't do anything for me. And here we go. The Long Road from Nickelback. Okay. I think the voters got it right, right?
I would have voted for Audioslave, but
I would agree.
Yeah, I might have been on the Audioslave bandwagon there. Yeah. It's possible, okay. Especially I would have also probably maybe given a nod to it based on Foo's winning for their previous album. I have a little bit of that, like, pass it around kind of mentality. The socialist in me, I guess.
So they didn't get nominated for the best in the best rock category. I will tell you that they did get nominated for the hard rock category once we talk about the first song. So I'm going to save that. So here were the nominees. And I really think that there's at least two songs off this album that should have been nominated. But that's maybe I'm being the homer when I'm saying that. But Bring Me to Life, from Evanescence was one of the nominees. There was Calling All Angels from Train.
Under Rock, which,
okay. Seven Nation Army from White Stripes. Right. You've got Disorder in the House from Bruce Springsteen and Warren Zevon.
All right, that's cool.
And then Nickelback Someday.
All right, yeah, you lost me.
And let's be honest, like, I love Zevon, but that Zevon song got nominated because it was a swan song.
Of course.
And Bruce is
on
it.
And I'm fine with that. And it, but Disorder in the House, I like Disorder in the House. That's a cool cut.
No, I do too.
I don't have a problem with that one.
Yeah, but if you're comparing that to All My Life.
Well, it's hard to compare those types of songs. I wouldn't, that's not the one I would take out of there. I would take the Nickelback cut out of there, and then we've got room.
Oh,
you know what
sure.
I mean? Like, yeah. Let's not pick on Zevon and leave Nickelback alone. That's not how that needs to happen. Give me a Bruce Springsteen Nickel or Warren Zevon song that I dig and leave the Nickelback out of it. And I can roll with that.
All right, Link. I think you're catching some vibes that we're not Nickelback fans here.
I was guessing that. It just was very subtle.
Do you get requests from people asking you to play Nickelback?
No.
Good. All right. We like your audience.
Come up and make requests. But no, not Nickelback.
Jeff, you kind of brought up the production stuff and some of the background on that. Give me a little juice.
Well,
on that.
It just sounded like there's a lot of tension, a lot of kind of fighting back and forth. It sounds like Nate wasn't really happy during some of the sessions, and he and Dave had arguments in that. And I know Chris Shiflett mentioned it at one point about he felt like he would spend a whole afternoon in the studio and he wasn't playing. They were waiting to figure stuff out. Hawkins, there's a quote from him saying, "We didn't feel like we were much of a band," and there was a lot of animosity. And so I don't know. It sounds like they were really, they were really hyper focused on the production of the album, and they ended up tossing out most of the sessions and starting over. And it sounds like this is an album that they were kind of maybe sort of close to maybe breaking up, but this is also around the time that Hawkins it's after Hawkins OD'd, I think, right? He OD'd, I think, 2001.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
And yep. Grohl had gone on to do to play drums for Queens of the Stone Age and tour with them, and so I think that kind of got in the mix a little bit as well. And just in general, it sounds like they were trying to figure out the dynamics. I think they had some exitings and some entrances, and the shakeups that I think come with that, and the band dynamics that come with that. I think that where they're at today is a more confident place, where I don't think the same stuff probably has disrupted them the same way, because I think everybody kind of knows their place and is secure in their role in the band and doesn't feel like they have to. I remember even the documentary that came out when after Pat came back, Wasting Light, and Chris was talking about how that sort of rattled him a little bit, initially, because he was like, they're bringing back their original guitar player. How can you not sort of be rattled by that? So I think over time, everybody sort of found their place and understood you're not going to lose your spot, and this is kind of the family we have, and all that sort of stuff. But it doesn't sound like it was there on this one.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that can make for some good art. I mean, go look at, one of your favorite albums, or maybe your favorite album, Rumors. I mean, some good art can come out of those tensions.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, for sure.
So again, I think that some of that plays into some of the bad feelings that they have in the way that they talk about the record a little bit, probably plays into it. And then when they talk about it, people sort of glom onto that as well. And that affects the lore, I think, a little bit of it.
Okay. All right. You guys ready to dive into this?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So as a reminder, our scoring is based off a number of songs on the record. Wayne, how many songs on this one?
11.
Okay, it means our top song is going to get 11 points. Nick's favorite, 10 points on down to the lowest score of 1. So we're going to kick this off with All My Life. This is a pretty good way of starting off an album. I know we've been a little critical on the last three about sequencing and opening tracks, but I think they nailed it on this one. What do you think, Link?
All My Life, fantastic. I mean, it's one of my favorite tracks to play, and I heard this great story on the documentary back and forth about even when they're having a really bad show, if they can just get to All My Life, that seems to make everything better, and it seems to get them back on track. But high energy, just great vocals, great guitars. The whole song, top to bottom, is one of my favorite Foo tracks.
So for Joe Hero, where are you putting this in the set list?
This one's actually usually closer to the middle or the back third.
Okay.
Because we know it's one that when folks hear that opening guitar, they just really get into it. So we kind of save it so that when we pop it out, folks are already kind of in the mood for it.
There you go. Wayne, what do you got on All My Life?
I love this song. Yeah, this is the way to start. It's got a darkness, but it's heavy. This is where I don't trust Wikipedia entirely to begin with. So when reading what Dave Grohl said this song was about, which is only credited to Wikipedia, it took a different. I took a weird turn.
So what is it? What does Wikipedia say that it is?
It's when you look it up, it says Dave Grohl says something about references to orally pleasuring a woman, which makes the whole hate the taste thing really sound creepy.
Hmm. Okay. Yeah. So there's no references whatsoever of.
Oh, I'm sure there are. I didn't. I just was.
Jeff, was this in the book?
I listened to it.
He didn't say anything about in the book. No, he does. There's a quote from him that says that song is a little dirty. Use your imagination.
Okay.
So
all right.
That's
I even remember, when my 3-year-olds running around singing, I was like, well, I wonder if that's about something that I love it, but I hate the taste, or I don't know. There's stuff in here you can hear. There's little Nicky-esque kind of stuff. I've mentioned that before, and we've talked about it. It's like, you've such a delicate wrist, and if I give it a twist, something to hold when I lose my grip, will I find something in there? There's stuff that probably.
Okay.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's probably.
We've just ruined this song for like every listener.
Maybe.
Way to go, Wayne.
Yeah, that's possible. this would have been my favorite song when this album came out. It's just over time I've come to appreciate a different song on this album. Yeah. It took on some extra meaning. So that's the only thing that kept this from being my top song. But for a long time, this would have been my top song on this album.
Okay. And most people would agree with part of that sentiment. This is the most listened to song on this album based off of Spotify listens, over 250 million listens. It's pretty obvious that this and Times Like These were the two big singles. Times Like These, 146 million. Any guesses on least listened to song on this album?
I would probably say Low.
Yeah, it's actually Burn Away with 3.3 million.
Huh.
So we'll get there. This was obviously a radio hit, number one alternative airplay, number three on the mainstream rock, barely missed the top 40, the Billboard Hot 100, peaked at 43. I brought up the hard rock category for the Grammys. So this won for that particular category. The other nominees was Queens of the Stone Age. No one knows. So I guess you could say Dave was nominated twice. System of a Down, Aerials. POD, Youth of the Nation. And Godsmack, I Stand Alone. Which I do love that song.
I like the Queens of the Stone Age song. Other than that, I'm kind of.
Yeah, same here. I don't.
Well, none of us would be considered youth of the nation at this point. So I get.
Yeah.
Or even at that point. Yeah. Except maybe Jeff. He's considerably younger than us.
That's what he tells us.
Substantially significant. I don't remember. It's been so long since I've used that.
You use significantly. Yeah.
Significantly.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Let's get scores. Link, what do you got for a score?
11.
Top dog for Link. All right, Jeff.
10 for me.
Wayne.
11 for me. I do want to point out it says also one of the lines as well, I find something in there. So.
Yeah.
Okay. Like a king cake or something, you know, like a Mardi Gras cake, you know, like, hey, there's a little plastic action figure.
Yeah. Okay. You guys are
lost Link. I did anyway.
You did. He just dropped off. Yeah. He didn't like your Wikipedia comment, Wayne.
Yeah.
I hated to reference it, but I know.
You can't let it go to waste.
No, you can't. You can't.
All right. Low is the next song.
What was your score, Ben?
Oh, didn't I say? This is my 10. All right. Low is next, and this was actually a single, third single to be released. Dave described Low as a kind of song that you pray would be a single. It's the one that everybody likes, but there's just no way because it's too weird. And I'm looking at scores, and categorically, I think we have said to Dave with our scores, nope. I think you're wrong, Dave.
I disagree, sir.
I'm looking at the chart position, though. It was number 15 hit on the alternative chart, number 23 on mainstream. I don't recall this getting any airplay. Do you guys recall this at all?
I never heard this on the radio.
I don't either. And this is also another one that is definitely about sex.
Yeah.
It's 100% sex. He calls it out. It's about two people that realize they have more fun screwing each other than anyone else. It's kind of deep. That's what he says.
Guys seen the music video?
I haven't. I don't remember the music video for this one. If I have, I don't remember.
This is the one with Jack Black.
Yeah. Is it?
Yeah.
Doing
a little cross-dressing and wrecking a motel room.
Okay, yeah, I do remember. It's been a long time since I've watched it.
Yeah, go check it out. It's fun. I mean, it's just fun. It did get banned on MTV, which I don't... Why exactly, Wayne, did it get banned?
Towards the end, it gets a little weird. I could see... It gets... Yeah, I thought the same thing when I was watching the video. I was like, I can't see why it would get bored or why it would get banned. But then as you get into it, the sex starts to get a little rougher. And okay. I mean, maybe it's not for the MTV crowd.
Well,
it may not be completely consensual at some point.
Don't you think that MTV kind of used to do that a little bit too, like ban a video and then show it, and then I mean, I thought that was sort of
more important.
That was their MO for a little while. Like, this is too hot for MTV, and now we're showing it to you weeks later. Yeah. It's just like whatever. Yeah. This used to be banned here. Now you can catch it.
The B side for this one is a Husker Du cover. So Never Talking to You Again. You can find that on the deluxe version, I believe that is. Link, I'm looking at score, so this didn't do much for you.
Yeah, not really. I mean, it's intricate. The guitars are crazy in terms of what they're doing, and it's a little bit different than what they've done in the past, but personally, we tried covering this as one of our deep cuts, and it was just a painful experience for me personally. Everybody else in the band loves it and wanted to do it, but just I had to make the executive decision and just say, I can't do this. It's just too painful for me. And so I think that influenced my score.
Painful for you from a singing standpoint, or just not a cohesive song for a covers band?
Well, it's really hard. I think both, actually. It's a hard guitar part to play and then also sing over. The arrangement isn't kind of typical, and so it was just difficult to kind of remember the sequencing as you're playing it. But the few times we did it live, nobody got it.
Yeah.
I mean, we just got dead response, and I think we were the only ones who were enjoying it. Well, the other guys in the band were the ones
enjoying it. Right. All right, well, I'm going to justify my score. So I have a higher score than all of you. I gave it my 5, and it's mostly for the end part.
The sex part.
No.
The sex.
Right? No. Oh. The end part.
Ben likes sex songs.
The video.
Maybe. I do have a thing for Jack Black. I just did watch.
Yeah, he also has a thing for Bugs Bunny and drag.
I do.
Too, so he's
I
just do. Got a thing.
Yeah. No, the video did not influence my score. I like the ending part. I really struggled with my bottom 5 for this album. I'll get to that when we get closer to some of the other songs. Wayne, what's your score?
2.
Okay, Jeff.
This is my 1.
All right, and Link's already mentioned this is his lowest. So, all right, have it all. And I already mentioned that Low was a single. This was actually a single as well. This was 4th single. And it's more known for its B-side. Because that's Darling Nikki. Yeah. All right. Yeah.
Well, the B-side is better than the A-side.
Yeah, that's for true. Sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I was looking on eBay to see how much the single CDs were going for. You can find copies of it around $15-$20 on eBay or Discogs. The Australian version, however, will set you back about $75.
Why?
I don't know, other than it's from Australia. Here's the funny part. So I brought up Weenie Beanie earlier. So the U.S. version of the CD has Have It All, Darling Nikki, and Disenchanted Lullaby, a live version, and Weenie Beanie all listed on the inlay. However, Weenie Beanie doesn't appear on the CD itself.
That's the first time that the old switcheroo works out in your benefit.
Worked out pretty good.
Now that's interesting that the single is that cheap because I don't think it's tough to find the Darling Nikki cover, isn't it? It's not in Spotify, I don't think.
Isn't it?
No, they've got Darling Nikki karaoke version in the style of Foo Fighters, which is funny to me. So it's done more. They're like, nah, it's not the Prince version. You know, if you want to sing the Foo Fighters version.
Interesting. I hadn't sought it out, so I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things that it's not that readily available.
All right, so I have to ask Link, do you ever do the Foo Fighters version of Darling Nikki in your sets? Did we lose Link?
I think he pointed at his ear for a second, so might have lost him. Mark Bryant thing going on.
Yeah, a little bit.
It is North Carolina.
Yeah, it is North Carolina.
Is that where Link is? Link's in North Carolina?
Yeah.
Right. Well, I don't know what it is about the internet in North Carolina.
I don't either.
You know, it's probably about the same thing as reproductive rights in terms of, you know.
It's only slightly more important.
Right.
Oh, boy. All right. Wayne, you had a little bit higher score than me and Jeff for Have It All.
And my apologies. I didn't mean to. I don't find it to be terribly. It's not one of the stronger songs. I think lyrically it reminded me a lot of stuff off the debut. It's not. Yeah, the gist is there, but he does get a little. It's more inconsistent than it is nonsensical, like the first record.
Yeah,
I think this fits a little bit in Shiflett's comment about I think there's a better song here than what we end up with. I think it's got the germ of a song that might be interesting. I like the shift in tempo that they do, but it just for whatever reason doesn't quite come together for me.
Yeah. Link, what do you got on Have It All?
I have a 6. It's about middle of the pack for me.
Is this something that you guys would cover? Is this a deep track? Or no?
No, I mean, I think this one's a little too obscure. It would really take some serious, serious Foo Fighters fans to recognize it. But, I mean, it has some interesting parts going on. I kind of see what they were trying to do with it. But and it's got that typical go to the sort of soaring chorus on it.
Yeah.
But, it's not as strong as the top half of the CD.
Do you cover the B-side, the Darling Nikki Foo Fighters version? Do you ever do that?
Darling Nikki.
Yeah.
No, we do not. We do not.
You want to keep your day job, right?
I do.
Yeah. All right. Times Like These is next. I got everybody's scores, didn't I?
No.
No. Okay. So. All right. Link coming in and out on the internet is throwing me off my game here. Jeff, what do you got for a score?
Two.
Sorry about that, guys.
No, no worries, man. No worries. It happens. Two for Jeff. Wayne?
Four.
Okay. And this is my three. All right. Times Like These. Jeff, throwing it to you.
Again, like I said earlier, I think that All My Life would have been my favorite. Times Like These over the years has just overtaken it. And again, it's one of those songs. I think I mentioned it on, I don't remember which episode now we're talking about, where this is the first song that I saw live again. Was the Foo Fighters show last year, and it was the first song out of the gate, and I think they did that on purpose. Very much yeah. Fit the mood. The Times Like These, you learn to live again, you learn to love again, you learn to rock again, you learn to whatever Times Like These you learn to again means. You know, Dave actually says, I think actually that this is the best song I've ever written. It's very emotive and passionate and universal. And I think he's right. I think that it doesn't even matter what he wrote it about. It's one of those songs that can be about whatever you need it to be about at yep. a given time, that just sort of picks you up at a, you know, whatever state you're at, and just helps you reset. Or it does that thing that music does for me, which is resets a mood, a vibe, whatever. And that's what this song does. And man, seeing this, to be honest, like, having them open the show with this was emotional. Like, it almost like choked me up to, I was like, this is what I've missed. I mean, you know how passionate I am about live shows in particular, but yeah, that feeling yeah. of like that thing that's been gone from us at that point for, you know, what had been at least a year and a half, you know, from the time that we had had live shows, and how much I'd missed music in my life at that point. It really just hammered that home for me.
Yeah. Yeah. This was a big hit as well. Peaked at number 5 on the alternative charts, number 5 on the mainstream rock. Over in the UK, was a number 1 UK rock and metal chart topper. One other thing that I read, so we're going to bring up John Kerry's name here in an upcoming episode. So this song was being used by George W. Bush for his 2004 campaign without the band knowing that he was using it. And Dave was like, all right, well, maybe I will just go join John Kerry's campaign and actually play the song like it's intended to be. And so anyways, we're going to talk about John Kerry significantly in an upcoming episode, because and I think part of it is because of this particular song. So Link, anything on this one?
This is one of my favorites. It could very easily have been my top one from this record, but really all-time favorite songs. You know, this is one we've used as an opener. This is one we've always make sure is in the first 5 songs on the set, because people love it so much. And you know, coming out of the pandemic when we started playing shows again, you know, I would usually introduce it as a song about resilience. And, you know, it's very similar to what Jeff was describing as well. Yeah. And it really is a powerful song in that regard. And just all of us coming out of what we come out of the last 2 years. But yeah, absolutely one of my favorite songs.
Yeah. And there's not a whole lot lyrically behind the song either. But it's just, it strikes a chord, and because of that, I think that it, you know, this is one of my favorite Foo Fighters songs. This is definitely my favorite song off of this album. This is my 11. Jeff, what do you got?
This is my 11 as well. And like I said earlier, when I talked about the album overall, I would be shocked if this album, if this song is not in my top five when I go back through and sort of revisit the lists.
Yeah. Wayne, what do you got for a score?
It's 10, just barely. There's two songs that just rise above the rest. And like you had mentioned, really there's two short verses, but he packs so much into them. Also the repetitive nature of the chorus doesn't feel that. It doesn't feel so much just because it really does resonate. But I mean, I like, you know, the band, there's some lines in there that it kind of states that if this band doesn't, you know, we could go either way. We could break up the band, but if we do go on, we're going to be phenomenal.
Well, and I think with regards to what was going on with them, I read somewhere else, and I don't know where the quote is now, but there was something about this too, where it did speak to the animosity that the band had, and it was about kind of sort of coming back together a little bit and go, you know, in spite of all the adversity, this is where we're at. So,
yeah. All right, Link, give us your score as well.
I had a 10, but again, just barely.
Yep.
You know, it's just such a powerful song.
Well, don't feel bad. Much like Jeff and I shouldn't feel bad that all my life was 10, because guess what? We tied it up. So
that's perfect.
Tie for first for all my life in times like these. Right. Average score of 10.5. So all good.
Yeah, luckily no one screwed it up by giving either one of them a 9.
Exactly. All right, Disenchanted Lullaby is the next song. This tracked pretty well. This finished at third overall for the record in our scores. This is one of those deep cuts that maybe it is because it comes right after times like these and I've listened to it a lot, that maybe it just hits my sweet spot as well. But I really dig this song. I feel like it is it's one of those songs where I wish they would play it more often live, because I really, really do dig this song. So my question for Link is this one of your deep cuts?
It is not. It's not in the in the set rotation. Great song though. But you know, it's one we have talked about from time to time.
Here I was planning on coming up to North Carolina to visit you and see you guys live in concert, and you just disappointed me, Link. I'm kidding.
Sorry.
Yeah, it's all good. Jeff, you and I have the same score for this one.
Yeah, this is my third favorite on the album. I just think this song is fantastic. I love the places it goes. I love the dynamics of it. Again, it's one of those that fits into what Shiftless said about there are some great songs on this album, and I think this is a great song. I genuinely do. And it's got this sort of haunting, moody quality to it that is very, very cool.
Yeah. Wayne, what do you got on this one?
Yeah, the dynamics, just like Jeff said, that the way it's kind of trippy, kind of got a very Alice Through the Looking Glass feel in the verses, and then it starts rocking out in the chorus. But I think, there's a lot to be said here. It was one of those songs that the more I lyrically, nothing stands out tremendously, but that contrast in the verse to the chorus.
Yeah. Okay.
I like what's that. I like that Alice reference. That's a cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wayne, what do you got for a score?
Oh, 7.
Okay. Link?
8.
All right, Jeff. Tell 9. Them our scores. Yep. There we go. All right. Tired of You is next up. This was the only track from the original sessions that made it to the album, and that's mostly because
Brian May's
on that.
Yeah.
That
and that's mostly
song.
My score, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
This could have been, this is the first one that jumps out to me 100% where I score this song too high. but it fits exactly, I think, what Chris is saying about it. This is a song that is the start of a great song or whatever it is he said. You know what I mean? This is one where the pieces are there and it could have been amazing. It just doesn't go anywhere. It's got parts of a great song, but I score it high because I think the May guitar parts are so good and it brings such an interesting dynamic to this song that we don't hear on anything else on this album. I do, so, you know, sometimes you'll get a guest appearance and it's stunt. This, he really brings something to this tune, I think.
Yeah, we'll save the vitriol for Norah Jones for the next episode. Wayne, I'm looking at your score. What's up?
It's mostly the pace. It's not any more repetitive in the chorus than any other song, but it for some reason feels like it.
Okay.
And I knew Brian May was on this record, and I guess I just never bothered to look because that would have affected my score. I think he's that kind of legendary guitar player.
Okay.
And so not knowing that.
So you gave it what? What's your score?
This was my least favorite.
Do you want a do-over? I'll give you a do-over.
No, I'm good.
Okay. All right. Jeff, what do you got for a score?
This is a 7, and it's a little too high, but it's the May guitar part, and it's the potential for the song that does it for me.
Yeah, I'm looking at my score. I gave it an 8, and I think it had something to do with Brian May.
I bet it does, because this song has the pieces. Wayne is not wrong. Wayne is not wrong in what he said in his criticism of it. It's dead on, but the pieces are there that I'm like, gah, I think there was an amazing song here, and the guitar is just enough to overscore it for me.
Yeah, okay. All right. Link, what do you got for a score?
I've got 3. And, you know, I think it's a couple of things. The title, for one, I thought it was very clever, because you go in expecting it to be one thing and then the lyrics are just a little bit different. But certainly Brian May being on it was giving a little more. But it just never went anywhere. And I think one of you already said that. But
yeah,
it just kind of meanders along and then it's over. And that's why I gave it a 3.
Yeah, I think I overshot it on my score. But
I don't agree. I don't disagree with either of the criticism that Link or Wayne drop on it. It doesn't go anywhere and it should have.
Yeah.
So
I agree with that. All right. Halo is next. And I'm going to throw this over to Link because you have the highest score out of all of us.
Yeah. I'm a sucker for the soaring choruses, right? And this is one of those songs that really has it for me. And it kind of harkens back a little bit to a song like Aurora. It has sort of that feeling when you open it up on it. And, but it's one of those songs that really paces and builds. And then it gets to the chorus, and there's a big payoff, and I just love it. That's why I gave it the score I did.
So knowing that, Jeff, that Aurora is, you know, scored pretty high for you, I'm kind of surprised at your score for this one.
It's exactly that reason. It does feel reminiscent of Aurora, and it feels like it just doesn't feel like they did. I don't disagree with what Link is saying. I like the soaring choruses as well. I don't dislike the song, but in terms of scoring, it's like you're trying to write Aurora Part 2, and Aurora is amazing to me. So it just doesn't... I think you've done this song better before. I almost think it kind of has a little bit of the jangly pop feel of Big Me, too, and doesn't do that as well.
Absolutely. I definitely hear that in there.
And yeah.
I think that's one of the reasons I probably did score it higher, because it has a great melody in the verses and then those soaring choruses. And I absolutely love the line of when you get a hold of one, like that whole that feeling of when it just, it's good or bad most of the time, but when you hit it, when it just get it right, it's unbelievable. Because I like, from a songwriter aspect, he's got a lot of religious words, but he doesn't really create any kind of overly religious imagery. This more questioning mortality, this living, you know, there's good parts of life and there's bad parts of life. I don't, you know, what's beyond that. But then it's back to the, you know, back to what I know for sure. You know, the uncertainty behind the most certain thing there is. I think he really, from a songwriter aspect, dug a little deep.
Yeah. My only note here, Wayne, is I wrote, pretty sure Wayne track this higher because there's an F-bomb.
The F-word in. Yeah. He doesn't sneak a lot of those in, so you got an excellent point for that.
And I will say that I scored these, and I hadn't spent much time with the lyrics, and then I read lyrics. I like this song. I like the lyrics better than my score reflects because it does have a lot of the religious allegory kind of stuff and the faith stuff, and his halo is dragging behind him everywhere he goes, and you know, there's a lot of religious sort of imagery in this. So I think had I paired the lyrics up with my scoring at the time, I might have scored a little higher too.
What's your score?
It's a 3.
Okay. Wayne?
8.
This is my 7. Link?
9.
Okay. Lonely as You is next up. I really like the pre-chorus of this, but then there's just too much Dave screaming at the end of the song that dropped it down for me. And when you brought up the Chris comment, this was the song that immediately came to mind where I'm like, if they could have reined it back a little bit, maybe redid the vocals, I would probably really, really dig this song.
Me too.
I don't hate it. I mean, my score of 2 is making it seem as though I hate it. I don't. I just, there's elements to this song, and
I think that's a great assessment of it. It's one more song that fits that categorization that he made about there's pieces of great songs. I think there's pieces of a great song in this one too that just doesn't quite get there. And if they'd had Brian May on it, I probably would have scored it higher.
Absolutely. Link, anything on Lonely as You?
Yeah, I think I agree with everything that's already been said. It has those elements. I do like the guitar tone on it, but again, it just doesn't seem to fit as well as some of the other songs do. And
yeah,
it just another one of those songs that doesn't seem to really go anywhere.
All right, Wayne, tell me your score and justify it.
Oh, I gave it a 3. It's right along the lines of what everybody said. There's moments there. The moments where it rises up don't outnumber the moments that it doesn't.
Okay. Jeff, your score?
5.
Okay. Link, your score?
2.
All right. Not matching Link's score. All right. Overdrive is next up. And I already brought up the low and Have It All being singles. I think that this could have been a single. I wonder if they didn't pick it up as a single because it sounds maybe a little too familiar to, like, Learn to Fly.
Maybe.
I think it does have a little bit of that element. Anybody want to take a stab at lyrical interpretation? I read into this that maybe it's about Dave and Taylor's relationship.
I don't know.
I thought the last 3 songs have a real questioning, you know, not questioning so much as acknowledging your own mortality, that this is a bit temporary. But this of those 3 songs, this is the one that kind of rallies out of it. Like, I'm not going to let that affect me here and now.
Yeah. Overdrive, we're going life or death.
Hammer down.
Two strangers, no relation. Two strangers, no relation on the mend. I don't know. Maybe it is the freshness of Taylor's passing that I'm looking maybe at that stuff. But I don't know.
One to me feels a little bit like the Foo Fighters covering the Foo Fighters in a way, not in a bad way.
Okay.
But like, this feels like a very Foo Fighters song, but not in the soaring aspects or the very peak of it. It feels like here's a Foo Fighters song that you're like, yeah, that sounds like a Foo Fighters song. I don't know if that makes any sense.
No,
but
it does. One of the things I like about this song is that I feel like it would fit on The Color and the Shape.
Yeah.
Or even maybe the better stuff off the debut. So it does definitely have that, the Foo Fighters growing into themselves before they get, because I think on this album and the previous one, they start to almost sometimes get heavy to to show that they can. And this one reminds me a little bit more of how it started, the best parts of how it started.
Yeah. Okay. Link, what do you got for our score?
On Overdrive, I have 4, about middle of the pack. And, you know, this is one of those ones that's an interesting song that I almost like the melody on the verses a little more than the chorus. You know, it just seems to be a little more melodic before it gets to the chorus.
Yeah.
Is what sort of strikes me.
Yeah. Wayne?
9.
Okay. Jeff?
It's my 6.
Okay. And this is my 4. All right. Burn Away. And I already mentioned that this is the least listened to song on the album. And this is definitely my least favorite song. I don't hate it. It's not like a skippable one, but it's my least favorite. This also has, for me, it has some really good parts to it. And I just felt like it just didn't. The theme maybe doesn't match the music for me. I don't know. Wayne, you had the higher score out of all of us on this one.
Yeah. I mean, I like the parts I like a lot more than some of the others. I think also there's something about the burning away the pride made me think about the band in that situation they were in, because ultimately, as much as you can call it a band and Dave Grohl is, this doesn't go on without him. He, for whether he uses that clout or not, he's ultimately decides whether this band continues or doesn't, because he is,
sure,
he's the former drummer for Nirvana. He's the guy with the clout and the celebrity that got this thing started. And so, but you can't rule like that, or you'll end up like the Smiths or any other, or the Police, and breaking up because the one guy doesn't want to play anymore and takes his ball and goes home. And so stripping away that pride, burning away that pride, and remembering that at the end of it, I am part of the band. This is a band.
Okay.
Yeah. And I wonder if that's kind of what happened on this album. Is like, I feel like the stuff you read about this album is that they may have reached that tipping point. It's that, you know, do we figure this out or do we break up? And clearly, you know, figured it out. That's an interesting dynamic for a band. And so, yeah, that might be exactly what this song is about.
Yeah. All right. What's your score on this one, Jeff?
I've got it at 4.
Wayne?
6.
Link?
I've got it at 5. And, you know, this one at the beginning, it sounds like that they were trying to emulate the band I have on my shirt, King's X, a little bit, with the way they sort of set up the song in the beginning. And I know that they were still doing a lot of that drop D stuff on guitar, which is one of King's X's signature things to do. And so it just sounded a lot like something King's X had done in their career. So that's one of the reasons I like it.
Gotcha. All right. All right, we're going to finish this up with Come Back. Longest song on the album. It's nearly 8 minutes long. There's, for me, I don't think that there's much lyrically. This is a jam song. You know, I mentioned the almost 8 minutes long. Going back to what we were talking about earlier, I think this is a song that they wrote with performing it live in mind.
Yeah, that might be the case. Yeah. I definitely am kind of looking forward to hearing Wayne's take on this one, because it is 8 minutes long. So that got me excited. And here's the thing, man. Dave spells it out for you. He says he's going to come back, and then he does twice. Like he drops away, and then he comes back. So he's not a liar. You can't say he's a liar. This is just an epic song that really kind of it kind of hits in the sucker part of me for those epic songs.
Yeah, for sure. And this is, I think, since we've been critical of the sequencing with opening and closing tracks, I think that they nailed it for this album. I think
they have the best two. Yeah. That's they did that right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. This was the first in sequence. This is the first album that I got to. I was like, I like the way they open it, and yeah. I like the way that they close it. This is the first time I've been there with them.
Yep. Agreed.
I like this song a lot. I think this is a really cool, just epic song.
Link, how about you?
Yeah, I love this one too. Even with the length of the song, it just it drives, it's intense. What jumps out at me from the get-go is that the guitar tone is different from what you hear on the rest of the record, which is a little unusual. You know, typically you go for more consistency with that guitar tone, it's just such a driving song, and it's one of those ones that can kind of get your blood boiling a little bit and get that adrenaline flowing. And so, I love it.
Do you guys play this one?
We do not.
probably in a bar
shot, though. It would be a lot of fun to do.
Yeah, probably in a bar setting, an 8-minute long song is probably not a wise choice, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Everybody wants the hits.
Yeah. What's your score on this one, Link?
I had 7.
Wayne?
I gave it a 5. I have a list of things, looking at my notes, of things I like about it. I love the drums in this one. I love that weird, like Link was talking about, that weird guitar riff that comes in, that punctuates kind of each line. I love that we had mentioned him screaming before on this record and on other records, and he gets to that, I think, to the perfect spot that Dave Grohl will kind of live in a little bit more in the future, where he's just short of screaming, but he's aggressive and it comes through. But that acoustic meandering does not benefit this. You're right. It drives right up until it completely goes to church. And then
there it is
too long. Like, if you want to make a point, make your point. You don't have to wander around there like Jews in the desert for 40 years. Get back and then come back. Like, end it there. I will say this, that there's been a lot of religious imagery throughout the songs in this. And then he ends it with "Come Back," which is the resurrection. That's how you drop the mic.
Okay.
I love the acoustic part. I love the way it builds back to electric. They just sort of strip it all down, add things back in, and then get back into a rocker for it. So it's, yeah, I'm, you know, and then you still have another 2 minutes left, which is like, yeah. Hell yes.
Feels like 10.
Yeah. If it was only 10, I give me another 2. I'm there for it. Let's do this.
All right. Wayne, what's your score?
A 5. It's once again, there's lots of really good things about this song that, the way it fumbles to the finish line is not part of that, but.
Okay. I gave this my 6. I almost want to flip my score with Tired of You, which I gave my 8. I really do dig this song. Jeff, did I get your score?
No, I'm a 7. Or no, I'm an 8 on this. I'm an 8.
All right. Link?
7.
Okay. This is where I always ask, did we cover everything? Did we miss anything? We get it?
I think so. After revisiting this, do you not think this is maybe better than you thought it was, or that you remember, or that people say it was? There's some really solid songs on this record. Yeah,
I think when we were talking about, you know, no one wanted to come on and do this one, and we almost sounded like we were dreading it. And then I hadn't listened to it in years, and I the first listen through, I was like, this isn't bad. I mean, the pizza and sex analogy works perfect for this record.
Absolutely. It does work for this record. I think that it's still in my bottom 3. Just because of there's so many songs that are, they're just so close. They're so close to being really, really great songs, and they're just good. And there's nothing on this album outside of, for me, for Burn Away is definitely my throwaway song. Everything else, like, I'm looking at my 2 and my 3, and I'm like, kind of feel bad for those scores.
My 1 isn't even a throwaway on this. Not really a throwaway.
Low is not a throwaway.
It's not a throwaway for me. I have 4 songs on this album that I think are fantastic. So that, yeah. that's not a bad album. You know, I do think there are some that could have been, you know, that could have been better, and what they were going through, they may have rushed at the end or whatever. But when you say even this in your bottom three, the Foo Fighters catalog is pretty cool. And as, it as is. A Foo Fighters fans, yeah. it's not sitting there with a bunch of misfires.
Nope.
So that's not the worst. It might end up about the same place for me when I'm all done. I don't know for sure, but it might be about middle of the pack for me. Because I like their catalog. I dig what they do. And I'd rather have this album than not have it. It's not one that they should be embarrassed about.
No.
And it's got a couple of songs on here, a couple that are just, you know, all time. And then a couple more that I think are, you know, would probably be somewhere in my top 20.
Yeah, for sure. No, it's overall, it's a good album. It's not a great album. They have some great albums. This is a good album. Link, what's your final analysis of One by One?
I think this feels like a record that has like three tiers, and the top tier being those top two songs that we've talked about, On My Wife and Times Like These. There's just such a broad gap between those two songs and then that middle tier. Yeah. And then another broad gap between the middle tier and the bottom tier too. So, but I still think it's right in the middle of the pack for me. It is one that, as I went back and listened to it, I think I appreciated a lot more than I did maybe when in my younger years when I was listening to it. But still right about in the middle of the pack feels right.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good. All right. Already spoiler alerted on our tie for first. So All My Life and Times Like These deservedly is tied for first. Third is Disenchanted Lullaby, average score of 8.25. And then we've got Halo, which, despite Jeff's three, yeah. Is in our top five, average score of 6.75. And then Come Back is our fifth with an average score of 6.5. And Low, categorically, is our lowest song. Average score of 2.25. So
yeah, a very listenable album. Some real highs.
Yeah, I think even though I kind of said yeah, this is probably my least favorite. Again, it goes back to the analogy that we've made a couple times on this. It's like Sex and Pizza, man.
Yeah. Well, I'd go back to, I guess we haven't said this yet, right? Because the In Your Honor episode hasn't come out, right?
It has not.
That'll come out after. Are we allowed to talk about the fact we said anything on there? Or one of the things we said
tease.
In that.
Give it a tease.
One of the things we said in that episode was that it sort of packs a lot of middle ground. The highs weren't super high. The lows aren't super low. And that's what I would say with this. I think the highs in this album for me are higher than the highs on In Your Honor. That's what I would say. And it's songs that I still really like, but the highs jump up bigger. They're bigger swings in this one.
Yeah. Link, we already recorded that particular episode. So compare this to In Your Honor. What do you think of Jeff's assessment there?
I think that's probably right. You know, of course, Best of You is another one of my favorites, and
for sure,
you know, it's definitely the song that is the top of the heap on that one. We do know Way Back, but you know, I think when you compare All My Life and Times Like These to the tracks on that one, I do think that they're sort of head and shoulders above what you're going to find on In Your Honor.
Yeah. Thanks so much for coming on. I know that we pulled the switcheroo on you for this because of the scheduling stuff. So, tell our listeners about Joe Hero, where they can find all of your happenings.
Yeah, if you go to either Facebook or even Twitter at Joe Hero, Foo Fighters Tribute, it's real easy to find us. Find all of our shows. We're also on Reverb Nation with a list of shows there too. And we've got one coming up on May 20th, which was actually the date that Foo Fighters were supposed to be in Raleigh, North Carolina. And local venue asked us to come and play and do a tribute to Taylor Hawkins. So we're doing a couple set of Foo Fighters on May 20th, and it's going to be a special night. a lot of interest in, a lot of buzz about it, and we're really looking forward. We're going to do some stuff we've never done before. We're going to expand our lineup to kind of match what the Foos are doing or have been doing with the keyboards and the background singers on a couple of songs. So that's going to be a lot of fun. But it's a bit bittersweet, of course, with losing Taylor.
Have you played any shows since that, or is this going to be the first one?
We've done two.
Okay.
And you know, after he passed, one of the songs that we wanted to make sure we added was Sunday Rain, which of course he sings lead on Concrete and Gold. And we've done that as a special tribute to him the last two shows, and people have really connected with that. That'll be one we'll be doing on the 20th as well.
Very good. Yeah, I should be in Raleigh on the 20th.
Really?
To Raleigh, see the Foo. We're not going there. But yeah, had tickets to go see the Foos that night. So good. Not Charlotte. Come on. I was saying let's not go there. Let's not go there. Anyways.
And did you get links? Did you ask him what his favorite Foo Fighter album is? I don't think you did.
I did not. I did not. So Link, what is your favorite Foo Fighters record?
It feels like a little bit of a cop out to say The Color and the Shape, but I just don't know how you beat it. Wasting Light is up there for me as well. It's top to bottom, really good. But The Color and the Shape just has so many epic hits, and even the deeper cuts are just so well done.
Well,
it's such a powerful album.
You're in good company.
You're in good company. You're with Wayne and I then.
Yeah.
We don't know what Ben's is yet. He hasn't revealed.
I haven't revealed mine yet.
I suspect it's Wasting Light, but that's the spoiler. That's a spoiler. Spoiler alert. It's not a spoiler if I don't know. I'm just making a guess. I'm not allowed to. I can prognosticate, right?
I'm just smiling and shrugging my shoulders at you.
I'm just saying that's the one I was talking about earlier. That part of the way through the album, I was like, boy, I wonder if this is going to overtake it, and then it just didn't. So it's not. I don't think it's a cop out. I think you're right. I think Color and the Shape is a great overall Foo Fighters album.
Yeah. No. Solid. Solid.
Not a bad one at all to have your favorite.
All right, well, let's wrap this up. Of course, you can find all of our old episodes. Go to recordsrevisitedpodcast.com for all of that. Socials, @podcastrecords on Twitter, Facebook page, just search for Records Revisited Podcast. Wayne is on the Instagram. Where can they find us there?
@recordsrevisitedpodcast.
I sounded old when I said the Instagram, didn't I? I really did.
Yeah, that's what made you sound old.
Exactly.
Get off my lawn.
And of course, don't forget to join our Patreon, get episodes a week early. So, you know, Jeff, if you want to join early, I'll post the police episode early so you can hear Wayne and I talk about you.
All right. Fantastic.
Yeah. For everybody else, go to patreon.com/recordsrevisitedpodcast to get episodes early as well. And if you contribute at the guest revisitor level or above, you can join us on an episode to talk about one of your favorite records. So that's it. All right. Link, I forgot to tell you. So even though you've got like a 2-second delay, when I say we are Records Revisited and we are, I pause for a moment, then we all say out together.
All right.
Okay. So thanks for listening. Please go support the arts. Go to the live show. Buy a t-shirt of the band. Buy a record. Visit a record store. And not just on record store day. We are Records Revisited and we are
out.
Out.
I think you should just leave it like that. That's so much better. I even tried to pause
close the gap. Yeah.
I tried, and then it's still, that's funny, man.
I loved it.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's great.
That's awesome.
All right. Nice to meet you, Link.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, this nice to meet you.
Fun. Good to meet you all.